This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, the Throwback Thursday. We are going back to 2005. It was a date that the NFL fined Randy Moss $10,000 because the week before, in a game at Lambeau Field, Moss cut a touchdown pass and then fake mooned the crowd. I love Throwback Thursday because I always like going back in sort of the memory banks. But also this month and leading into February, we're going to visit some Super Bowls that will be played on certain dates. You know, like, you know, maybe it wasn't the most memorable Super Bowl of all time, but Super Bowl VIII was played on this date in 1974 when the Miami Dolphins beat the Minnesota Vikings. It really fills the month of January with different ones when Super Bowls were played around this time or even earlier. There was one that was played on January 9th. Now, this year's Super Bowl, February 13th, with the addition of the extra week into week 18. And, of course, we have now extended it into middle of February, which I didn't think I'd like, but I actually kind of do, to be honest with you. I'm not big as expansion in terms of – I wasn't big for 18 games because I did think that there was going to be some attrition that I wasn't really interested in terms of teams – you know, losing players and suffering losses and how it will affect them down the stretch. But we're not talking about that going into these playoffs, and I think that's important. We're not talking about Joe Burrow missing the postseason or, you know, Tom Brady missing the postseason or anybody of significance. You know, we've got relatively healthy teams. They're all kind of banged up at this time. Relatively healthy teams going into the playoffs. But we do have 3 days, and we're going to have a Monday night game. This one's a little weird. Again, I'm not trying to be old school. I'm not trying to be like it was better in the day. I think it's fine to spread them out and give every single game its importance on the time slot. I was telling my wife, I was like, I'm going to be watching a lot of football this weekend, but the cool thing is I'm going to be watching like all of the playoff games because they all get their moment to shine. It's not like I'm watching the Titans and six other games are going on. Every single game is going to be on, and it's going to take over at certain time slot. So Monday night is not, you know, not so bad. You get, you know, a chance to see a Monday night playoff game, and I think that's good. It does lead to a little bit of a short week heading into the playoffs coming up next weekend for whatever team wins that game. But, you know, I think there's other things to cry about when it comes to the way the NFL operates than a Monday night playoff game. All right, we got the good, the bad, and the dumb coming up. And then Levin Reed is going to join us from Boston, one of our favorite guests. In the analysis of the Patriots as they get ready for the Buffalo Bills, part 3 of the 2021 season. It's all coming up as Wake Up Call continues on Sports Map Radio.
Wake Up Call continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, good, the bad, and the dumb on this Throwback Thursday. All right, so let's get the good of the day because the playoffs are coming, and that's good. But what's even better than that?
Well, what's better than that is something that you will find not just good, maybe not even great, but probably the best news that you've heard this year.
Yes?
There's a new sports documentary.
Oh, I love documentaries.
Coming to Netflix.
Uh-oh.
That is brought to you by the same people who created Drive to Survive.
Oh, okay. Ah, all right. Let's hear about this.
It will follow the 2022 PGA Tour season.
Oh, excellent.
And it'll feature 5 of the top 7 players in the world. 22 players overall are confirmed for it. And we'll have footage from all 4 majors. Yes, I'm saying all 4, including the Masters.
Man, that company does a really good job. But, you know, like all documentaries and reality shows, they you know, they'll create drama when no drama really exists.
Yeah.
They'll paint things that are maybe a little bit more dramatic than they really are. But still, I always...
Now, the bad part of this is that, you know, no Tiger, no Phil.
Yeah, guys like that are not signing for this thing.
But you will have Ricky Fowler, Sergio Garcia, Dustin Johnson, Brooks Koepka, Colin Morikawa.
Oh, that's pretty good.
I mean, Jordan Spieth, Bubba Watson, Xander Schauffele. So, I mean, you have some names.
Now, do you think we'll find it fascinating, the sort of everyday life of a PGA Tour golfer?
I think, yeah.
I think so, too.
I think because, I mean, you know, that's kind of like, I mean, it's definitely, I mean, this is definitely probably geared more towards dads.
Yeah,
you know, older guys who sit there and actually play. I mean, I don't know what the appeal will be for like a 20-something year old. You know, I can see your Drive to Survive. You're a race car driver. It's like fast. It's, you know, equated to movies. Like golf is very slow and patient, but at the same time, you know, we're gonna you'll be following. You see Jordan Spieth or Ricky Fowler, and they're like, yeah, you know, well, we're gonna go play this golf course and jump on a private jet and fly there. There is a
way that you're going to need to promote this that is a draw, and because I'll tell you why. I have a lot of friends who are now into Formula One because of Drive to Survive. But what caught them when I ask them about it, and I go, okay, I was a little late to the Drive to Survive party, but then I watched it, and I caught it in its third season, so I missed like the first two seasons of it. But what caught their eye was the promotional video on Netflix. So if you go to Netflix and can see the trailer immediately talks about how dangerous it is. Immediately.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't say, oh, yeah, this is a glamorous sport around the world as they take some of the fastest. They literally talk about drivers going, and they show crashes. They show mothers praying. And, like, one mother is saying, I think it was Daniel Ricciardo's mother, was like, I pray every time he gets in that car. Every time.
Not the one who caught on fire?
No. That. So, but they show, like, vicious crashes where you just are like, how does somebody survive that? And there's an emphasis on the danger. So people were attracted to that. Like, I don't really know this sport, but people are could die in it. Let me just see what this is about. How do you do that with golf? How do you make it so that there's a level of draw to it than hitting golf balls onto pins?
I almost feel like you got to start off with Pink Floyd's song "Money, Money, Money."
Right? Maybe that's it.
They're just kind of rolling in it.
I watched a YouTube video of a guy. He does golf videos, and somehow he's built up such a unique channel, and he's well known enough that he gets invited to private clubs, and he'll play private clubs and do videos of them. He's not a member there, but somehow he gets invited to play at these elite clubs. And I can't remember the golfer's name, but he was at a club that golfer, that's his home course. That's where he practices every day. It is swimming in luxury. Like that's his office. Like whoever PGA Tour golfer was, I can't remember who it was for the life of me. That's where he goes every day to practice, work out, do his drills, play. And like in it was like the most elaborate spa, the most elaborate restaurant, the most elaborate facilities. Every clubhouses with free stuff that you like, little shacks along the golf course that had free anything you want. Like you go in there, just grab ice cream and snacks and granola bars and drinks, all free because you pay so much money to join this club. And this golfer, that's his place. And I'm wondering if the average American would go, that's interesting. Or the average American go, it's just rich people playing golf for a living. I hope it's good because they do a good job, and I like golf enough to watch it. I will definitely watch it. I will definitely be interested in it. All right, what's the bat of the day?
The bat of the day is the Portland Pickles mascot is in some hot water.
Who are
water.
The Portland Pickles?
The Portland Pickles. I don't know which affiliate they're with.
What sport are they?
Baseball, minor league.
Baseball, okay.
Minor league. The Portland Pickles mascot took over the Portland Pickles Twitter site, right? And
right.
Posted a certain pick, if you will, that rhymes, you know, a word that rhymes with pick that is very...
Oh, no.
It's a disgusting act, Tony.
Did they really? The Portland Pickle mascot did that?
Well, kind of, right? Because the Portland Pickle is a green mascot. He has, you know, green hands.
Oh, no.
Right? But the way that the hand, and they explained it, says we have ended our mascot takeover. It's come to our attention that this photo can be misinterpreted as a disturbing image. Dylan, that's the Portland Pickle mascot's name, Dylan, would like to go on record and say that he was trying to give his fans a thumb up. So when you look at the photo, all you see, I mean, you can see his arm, and then you just see just the green thumb. Nothing else. No hand. Just the green thumb sticking up from the groin area.
Don't you ever see something like that and you go, come on, how did 15 people not see this?
This is 100%. It has to be 100% intentional.
It has to be intentional.
Because
right?
you first glance at this photo, you're looking at it like, yeah, that would get HR called immediately.
Absolutely. You see a picture like that and you go, how in the world did everyone in the organization miss this? And then you go, like you said, you think, well, maybe they didn't miss this. Maybe they absolutely knew what they were doing. Right? Here's why. Here's little old me in Nashville, Tennessee. I didn't even know there was a Portland Pickles baseball team. Now I do know there's a Portland Pickles baseball team, and that may be the reason.
Yeah. Which, by the way, awesome name. I mean, once again, awesome.
Dylan is pretty good.
Yeah,
I like
Dylan.
That.
But once again, minor league baseball is doing it right with their names.
I'm
with you now. Now I know that there's a Portland Pickle team. I might want to get a Portland Pickle hat.
Why not? Why not get a Portland Pickle hat? Why not get one and just be wearing it? And people go, what's that hat? And you go, Portland Pickles baseball.
Yep.
And they go, really? And you go, yep. I'm a big fan. Portland Pickles baseball. Remember, it was the Montgomery Biscuits? Remember that was the team
Montgomery
we kind of
Biscuits.
A couple of years ago, they did something pretty funny, and we were like, that's our new baseball team. Now it's the Portland Pickles.
Well, there's what's the other one? It's like banana something.
Oh, the banana slugs.
UC Santa Cruz is
that's
the banana
UT
slugs.
Santa Cruz. Banana something. Yeah, they did the walk up thing.
Yeah, they do all the wild antics, they're golfing.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Portland Pickles, you have us.
Yeah.
I will search your logo. What's the dumb of the day?
The dumb of the day, I mean, it could have been bad as well, or it could be really good. I don't know, but the only way I can title this is Stoners Rejoice.
Stoners Rejoice.
Yeah, okay. A new study published in the Journal of Natural Products concluded that marijuana may prevent COVID-19 infections.
Oh, please.
Now, I don't put this on the same page as those who are saying, hey, if you drink urine, that'll prevent COVID. But a study found that that cannabinoids block cellular entry of SARS-CoV-2.
How?
I don't know. I don't know.
This is great.
You know, people were quick to point out that, you know, should have known when Snoop Dogg and Willie Nelson didn't get COVID.
No doubt. They were right this whole time.
Yeah.
God bless them.
So, yeah, apparently cannabinoids and cannabis products prevent the entry of the COVID virus into your cells.
Apparently they're going to need a lot of people to help do the experiments.
Yeah. Now, this isn't, I don't think it's in the New England Journal of Medicine. That's usually the standard that everyone goes by. I don't know if it's published in there.
Yeah, as the New England Journal of Medicine chipped in on this a little
bit.
Yeah,
maybe they're conducting studies now and just haven't came to a full conclusion. But if that's the case, you know, weed for everybody, right?
That's exactly right. Start spreading that around along with the vaccine.
Hey, you know what we should do? We should find out. I mean, are the Netherlands, is Amsterdam having issues with COVID?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great question. That is a wonderful question. Is Amsterdam in trouble with COVID?
You know, how are Colorado's numbers? Let's just look in the United States.
How about Boulder? Like, is Boulder still kicking around? Yeah, that's funny. That's funny.
So, who knows? I don't know. It feels like whenever there's a problem, weed is the answer.
No doubt. Like,
oh,
no,
this fixes
question.
That. It's like,
no,
you know, what it reminds me of is the dad in My Big Fat Greek Wedding who used Windex for everything.
Yeah, that's right.
It's like, oh, you got an issue? Just have some weed. That'll fix it.
It'll fix it. Exactly. All right, that's the good, the bad, and the dumb. Levin Reed's going to join us 40 past the hour. We'll talk to him about the Patriots and their matchup with the Bills, third time they're meeting this season. That is coming up on Wake Up Call. But coming up next, more information on the bizarre firing of Brian Flores that kind of baffled us all, and more information is starting to come out as to maybe there was a reason behind it. That's next on Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us on a Throwback Thursday, 2005. We go back to the NFL finding Randy Moss for the fake moon at Lambeau Field. So earlier in this week, we got the news that Brian Flores was out as head coach of the Miami Dolphins, and it was shocking at the time. We caught it late in our show. And I was really, really shocked. And when I went, kind of on social media, I was seeing that many, many, many people who cover the NFL on a regular basis were shocked. It didn't seem like it was the kind of coach who had taken a team that was absolute mess and was purposely a mess. That was the key. That Brian Flores was taking over a team that was purposely getting rid of good players, getting rid of contracts, starting from scratch, and he had the responsibility of taking that mess and turning it into a winning football team, which he did. And he, despite a 7-game losing skid, they had won 7 in a row, put themselves back in the playoff hunt, lost in Nashville on a rainy night, but then did beat the Patriots to close out the season in a game the Patriots needed. The Patriots weren't resting everybody. The Patriots needed that game, and the Dolphins beat them. So Brian Flores was, again, let go, and he's probably going to be scooped up. But like any story, there's always going to be something that's going to come out, right? The initial reaction of people who are like, I am blown away by this, and then days later starting to get more and more information that is coming out about the relationship that Flores had. Now, we talked about this because on Monday we said, oh, my God, this is shocking. But on Tuesday we pointed out that there was some tension between Brian Flores and general manager Chris Greer and owner Stephen Ross. And there was the trio. It seemed like Ross and Greer were on the same page, and Flores was fighting both of them in how the team is coming together. There's another report out, and this one is both coming out from the South Florida Sun Sentinel, and also the New York Post has picked it up and rolling with it, that in that game against Nashville, that there was a meltdown between both Brian Flores and quarterback Tua Tagovailoa, that the Titans, who were really dominating that game, they crushed Miami. And again, it was raining, it was wet, it was kind of cold, there was some turnovers, Tua didn't play particularly well, but Brian Flores F-bombed his way in at Tua Tagovailoa for his performance, saying at one time that he needed better beep and play from his quarterback in the locker room, and that Tua had said he doesn't know how to talk to people. So now we're starting to see a side of Brian Flores that we kind of knew. I mean, people had said, look, this is a tough guy, but he really is, he's intense, but he gets the best out of his players. And there are a lot of players who like that. Look, a lot of players like being coached, and they like hard coaches, right? Some they like that coaches get on to them. Coaches that get on to you tend to care about you, tend to want you to do your best. They're not apathetic, which is always the opposite. It's kind of the opposite of love. Hate, there's still not hate, I shouldn't say, anger, or like where you're really, really intense. It's because you're really passionate about that player and you want them to do particularly well. If you're apathetic, you wouldn't even know their name. And a lot of players like that. They thrive on that. But Nick Sirianni and Jalen Hurts is a perfect example of that. Jalen Hurts grew up with a coach father. And so when Sirianni, who is a coach, right, he's like that too. He knows how to dial that in. But here's the big issue here, and that is this. I mean, Stephen Ross wanted Tua Tagovailoa. He wanted Tua Tagovailoa as the quarterback. And as we were pointing out earlier this week, when the Dolphins were opening up the 2019 season, there was the tank for Tua conversation, right? There was, and the Dolphins were the lead dog in that. They would not get the number one pick. Cincinnati would, and Cincinnati took Joe Burrow. But at the beginning of the football season, there wasn't a, blow it up for Burrow, because we didn't know how good Burrow was going to be. The 2019 season came at us as a kind of a surprise in college football, how good Burrow was. But Tua was the guy early on that was going to be your franchise quarterback, and Stephen Ross bought into that. And he got him, despite the fact that he didn't have the number one overall pick. He did get him, and he got him over Justin Herbert, who has now turned out to be the better quarterback. But here's the thing, is that when you're an owner, and we talked about this with Shad Khan, remember? If you have a choice between the quarterback you want and a coach that doesn't want that quarterback, you are going to probably choose the quarterback over the coach. You can find other coaches. But if you really believe that you have a quarterback that can be your franchise quarterback, you tend to stick with them. Now, Tua hasn't really proved that yet. But I do think Ross was in a position where he was feeling tension from his head coach to him as the owner, feeling tension to the general manager, a guy he has trusted to build this team to a playoff contender, which has happened despite the fact that they're not in the postseason, and tension to a quarterback who Stephen Ross has publicly said he's wanted and is really only 2 years into a career. And so I think when you put all of those three factors in, it really becomes a story of how in the world would you have kept Brian Flores? How would you have? How would it have worked out? Flores is not in a position to need a job, right? He's a good coach. He's going to get hired somewhere. And if he doesn't get hired as a head coach, he's coming on as a coordinator. So he doesn't have to really change who he is because he knows that there are plenty of teams that will take him as he is. So you're not threatening him with his employment. Sure, you're taking a one of 32 job opportunity away, and you're taking the money that comes with that. You're not going to get paid the same amount of money as a coordinator. But I don't think Flores, as a young guy, is worried about his career arc enough to say, I'm going to change my personality. You reach a certain age, it's hard to change your personality. We sort of praise people that do, right, who have overcome certain, sort of addictions, if you will. We sort of praise those people. I mean, Ryan Leaf is an example I always point to. I mean, Ryan Leaf was a hated guy. You know, he was arrogant. He was young. He was given, the sort of this ability to rip people and rip people in front of people. And everyone just sort of dealt with it because he was a talent. But he is now a completely different person because he's learned some hard lessons in his life. And sort of we praise adults who do that. But for the most part, most people don't change their personality. It's hard to do. And Brian Flores, I don't think, is interested in that. I don't think he's like, oh, okay, I'll embrace Tua as a quarterback. He didn't want him. He doesn't want him. He wants Deshaun Watson. He wants them to make that trade for Deshaun Watson. He wants somebody else. He's not honed in on the development of Tua Tagovailoa as a starting quarterback. And I think that if you're the owner and that's the guy you want at quarterback and your coach does it, you have to make a choice. And the quarterback is usually the one that wins out. Now, Ross may find out years down the road that Tua is not a good quarterback, or he may find out Tua is an excellent quarterback under the right head coach. Who knows? We don't know what the future of that is. I think in Shad Khan's case, for example, when it came down to Urban Meyer or Trevor Lawrence, and you absolutely take Trevor Lawrence, he's going to be your franchise quarterback. He's the guy with all the upside. You can find another head coach in this league. If you're the Dolphins, you can find another head coach in this league. There are good ones available right now, right? But if you feel like you got the quarterback that can be developed and not only be developed and become a star, then you got to ride with that for a little bit. And I think Ross wants to ride it out a little bit more with Tua, and he doesn't want the quarterback to continue to give him grief for having him on the roster in the first place. And to me, I think there's that story that's starting to develop again as another head coach and another owner clashing over philosophy, not on the same page. And therefore, one of them's got to go. And it's not the guy that owns the team. Right. So, again, it doesn't. Now you're starting to see it's maybe not as surprising. Does that mean Flores is cooked? Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Oh, he'll have a job in no time.
In no time. Absolutely not. Look, I'm telling you right now, I think there are owners out there who will say, look, Steven didn't get along with him, but I could. If I have the right personnel that he likes, I don't mind the fieriness. I don't mind the passion. I don't mind the intensity. I may need a coach that actually does that. Maybe you just fired a coach that wasn't that, right? Maybe it was you fired a coach that was the exact opposite of that, and you felt like that's what you need. He will absolutely get another chance, without question. But he's not being let go. And this was the guys who covered the Dolphins on social media. Jeff Darlington was a perfect example of this. There were a couple of other guys down in Miami who covered the Dolphins. They were very quick to point out this on Monday, as Monday afternoon. He was not fired for wins and losses. He was not fired because he didn't make the playoffs. He was not fired because they went, what did they finish, 9-8? Oh my God, 9-8. No. Yeah, I think he finished 9-8. He was not fired for that. He was fired because off the field stuff. He was fired because in the office, he didn't get along with management, right? They just, and you probably have, maybe in your industry, you've seen it too. There's always that one guy, maybe just a little bit too, he fights management all the time. And he's like, we're not getting anywhere with this. We can't keep doing this. You know, it's unfortunate, but we got to let go. Maybe he's one of your top sales guys. Maybe he's someone else. I think in the Dolphins case, they felt like they had a good coach, a real good X's and O's guy, a guy that really had his team ready and prepared, used the talent that he had in the best possible way. But I think when you can't communicate and you can't agree on things and everything's a fight, you got to get rid of that conflict. All right, Levin Reed's going to join us. We'll talk Patriots next on Wake Up Call.
Heads up! Heads up!
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
2005 on a Throwback Thursday. And you know, in 2005, the Patriots were going to the Super Bowl, and the Patriots will play the Buffalo Bills coming up this weekend in the wild card match, the first playoff game for Belichick without Tom Brady. How are you, Levin Reed, WBZ Boston? How are you, my friend?
I'm not as warm as you guys. Apparently, the weather is it's decided that the Northeast is in what they would call a vortex of HE double hockey sticks.
Oh, I bet.
So it's okay, though, but it's winter up here, so got to get used to it.
All right, Levin's on our progressive guest line. All right, I got to get this. The Patriots closed out the season losing 3 of 4 after the bye week. Before the bye week, they looked like one of the best teams in the AFC. What were they doing wrong that they didn't do in their 7-game win streak?
I just think it's just paying attention to detail, one, and two, no fast starts. This is not a team that can play from behind. So they played the Indianapolis Colts, and going into that week, they told everyone that they basically had to get out and get out first because the Indianapolis Colts, I think they were the best scoring first half team in the NFL that year, last year, and they lost that game. They go to play the Buffalo Bills. The Bills get out first, and the Pats can play from behind. They can't do it. They beat the Jaguars because that's everybody's homecoming game, and they get against the Miami Dolphins. And I don't know, it doesn't make a difference if Tom Brady, Bart Starr, or anybody, when the Patriots go down to Miami, and especially in December and January, they lose.
Yeah, they do.
They just lose. It doesn't make a difference who's the quarterback. So that was going to happen. But they've got to they're not equipped to play from behind. Not yet, at least. They have to get out to fast starts. They have to. And I will say this. In this region, I know who Cam McCord is. He's a special teams coach for the Patriots. But the fans shouldn't know who Cam McCord is.
Right, yeah.
So we do a radio show. And they're like, fire Cam McCord. Whenever have you heard fans on a radio show know who the special teams coach is and know that
exactly.
He has to go? And that, you know, you can't have 3 punt blocks in a season and all these problems on special teams, especially with the Patriots team that spends so much money on special teams and so much time making it work.
Is there a difference in the way this team is viewed? I mean, if they had gone 10-7 with back and forth, losing to good teams, beating the weak teams, never really getting a feel for it. But that 7-game win streak, as I mentioned earlier, there were people who said this might be the best team in the AFC.
Well, when they were the number one seed, you know, on paper, they were the best team in the AFC, and they were playing with the best defense in the AFC. The difference is this. You came into the season saying, okay, let's just see what we can do with the rookie quarterback. And you and I have talked about this. See if we can make hay with this. And you did. You go 2-4. You're like, okay, we're just feeling our way out. But the rookie quarterback hasn't cost us any games just yet. Now you win 7 in a row, and you know, but we move the goalposts.
Yeah, that's right.
We move the goalposts. We're like, well, they should be able to do something. And then they lose the last 3 out of 4. And you kind of fall back to earth. Now, I will say this as we go towards this game on Saturday night. I would rather play this game in Buffalo than play the game in Gillette. I think the Patriots have a better chance in Buffalo. I'm not saying they're going to win, but I think they have a better chance in Buffalo instead of if they had to play here at Gillette. For some reason, I feel Josh Allen and that team, the Buffalo Bills, they play very sketchy at home. Again, they're not built to play in the cold weather, and it's going to be freezing there. It'll still be cold here, but if you look at the numbers, Josh Allen here, I think he's got like 10 touchdowns and 2 interceptions. Up there against the Patriots, it's 1 touchdown and 4 interceptions. So the numbers say that you should want to play them there.
I was been talking about this kind of this week and saying, especially talking about Tampa Bay, right? Whenever we break down Brady, any team that he's on, whether it was the New England teams or whether it's the Buccaneers, you can break down, this is what the offense was going to do. This is what the defense is going to do. This is what their opponent can do. All of that. But then there's always this, yeah, but Brady. There's always this second level that you always have to say. And then there's this guy who can do anything he wants at times and has shown us he can. So all of this might be mute. We haven't been able to do that with Belichick, without Brady. Does Belichick get that going into this game? Is there a, but there's still Belichick that we have to do in the analysis?
I will say this. I think there is still a Belichick thing, but I think that deals with the coaches. And I'm going to say that because I think you and I have talked about it or I've heard you talk about it, after that first game with the Buffalo Bills where they ran the ball 100 times and only threw the ball 3 times, it was, yeah, but Belichick.
Yeah.
And that was there. That was that game. And I think you can still see that. And by the way, I think you and I, if this was a, if they were playing the Kansas, if they were playing the Cincinnati Bengals, you and I would be saying, yeah, but Belichick.
Sure, sure.
Because that would be Joe Burrow's first game. That would be, you know, Zach going up, Zach Taylor going against Belichick. This is a third time around, and you, the best player on the field for the last two games, even when they, I mean, listen, I think Elon Musk has built this kid's arm. I mean, Josh Allen's arm is unreal.
Really, I've never,
he was throwing the ball in a 50-mile-an-hour wind gust, and I was like, this is out of control. But you're stopping one player. That's what you're doing here. You're slowing down one player. So can Butt Belichick slow down this one player and make this player look average? Because if he can, then they move on and they're able to get it done. And that's what he's facing. I mean, even in any press conference, I can read you the transcript. He says, you know, we have to make more plays than he does. That's what he's saying. He's not saying we have to make more plays than they do. It's than he does. He knows what the situation is. The situation is you've got to stop Josh Allen. And listen, I've been around Brady enough, and I think you've been around Brady. You've seen games. If Brady plays a preseason game, everybody's level of atmosphere and energy rises. I don't know what it is about that dude, but when he steps on the field, people really want to play against him. I think the same is for coaches and Belichick. I think the same. I think when coaches hear the press conferences, whether it's Sean McDermott, we've heard him pop off here and there and say, like, you know, let's not give this guy so much credit and this and that. Coaches are tired. So it's yeah, but Belichick to the coaching level, but maybe not to the player level.
What about this game where Buffalo won 33-21 in Foxborough? If they had lost that game, you could point to all the pressure being on. You can't lose to a team three times, especially one of your division rivals. Sure. But is there a level now where this dynamic of this game has changed because of what they did in Foxborough, how they bounced back and not only won, but won convincingly? Well, no, it was a close game in the third quarter, but
well,
won the way they
that
did
was a
it.
Beat up. Yeah. Yeah, that was a beat up. They beat up the Patriots. That was, I mean, the score 33-21, and it wasn't even that close. I still say the pressure's all on Buffalo. Listen, the Patriots were not supposed to be here that quickly. Do you agree with that?
I agree.
Like, if you're the Buffalo Bills and you left, you're like, okay, big brother has left and gone off to college. We're good. He's not coming back. And then in the middle of the season, you're like, well, did you fail? What are you doing here? Why are you still here? Why'd you come back? You know, how are you here so quickly? If you're the Buffalo Bills fans and you lose this game, you're like, how is that possible? And I think that's how the Buffalo Bills feel also. This game not only has it, whether they win by one is a statement game for the Buffalo Bills, because they cannot, in a situation, lose out to the Patriots and have the Patriots move on. And then they just have one season at the helm without Tom Brady. And then everybody, the narrative for the next year is, now you're chasing them again. And they were doing that for 20 years. So, I think the narrative has to, the pressure has to be on them to get better. And the narrative for the Patriots is this: go in and just play your game. Don't make mistakes. If you get in there and don't make mistakes against this team, the next round, I'm not saying the next round is going to be easier, but the next round will be a fresh start for you against a team that you haven't played twice this season. I think this game is tough for both teams. I mean, I don't know how. It's hard to play a team three times in a
Absolutely.
Season.
Absolutely. That's the, I think, cool aspect of this. Look, I know the NFL doesn't really it's tough to get a division rivalry in a playoff game, but 58 years, they've never met in the playoffs as teams have been up and down. I think it's really hard when you play a team three times. I mean, there's so much information you have to digest on what went right and what went wrong in the two games that you met. That being said, has Mac Jones been in a position where he's had to do things, and has he done well at that?
I think all season long. I think he's hit every check mark that he's had to do. If you're saying the one thing he hasn't done, I think he's only led a team from behind, I think, once, and that was against Houston, but Houston was Houston. You know what I'm saying? So I can't ask you to make Houston into Buffalo. I hate saying this because he's a rookie, but he's a rookie.
Yeah.
So I feel like I always have to go back to saying he's a rookie, and this is what, his 19th game in the NFL or his 18th game in the NFL, including preseason. He's still learning. The process is learning. But because we've moved the goalposts on him as well, we expect him to perform a little bit better. I expect him. Look, I will say this to you. He looks physically tired. He physically looks like the rookie wall. He's been in it. He's living in it. He's built a house in it. He's watching TV in it. The rookie wall is on top of him right now. That's what he physically looks like. So they've got to monitor him and make sure that he's able to get through this. With that said, he still has the energy of a young kid. He's still leading the team. He's still saying all the right things. I don't know if they're going to, you know, like take the handcuffs off him. I don't think there's any way for you to take the handcuffs off him. I think he's hit the point where he is right now, and he's answered every question. And in the offseason, he can only get better. What does he have to do to win this game? I'll tell you what he has to do. If they have Ramondre Stevenson and Damian Harris, if they have both those running backs, they're able to help him out. And the secret to this game, which no one's going to talk about, but I'm going to tell you, if Kyle Duggar, the Patriots' safety, if he does not play, the Pats will lose, hands down. If he plays, it gives them a guy who plays on all three levels and a spy. So he's the guy to stop Josh Allen from running, to also stand up in the line and make blocks at the, you know, makes blocks at the line and tackle the running backs, and also go out and get the tight end and make sure that Dawson Knox cannot make a play. That's the guy. So now if they don't have, and the players will absolutely tell you this, they don't have a guy on the team that's Kyle Duggar with that strength, that size, and that versatility on their defense. And the way they play their defense with safety high, they need Kyle Duggar to do whatever he can do. And we were surprised yesterday that he wasn't, you know how the Patriots do it, he wasn't at the media portion of practice, but he was on the injury list, is limited. So, like, we got there, we didn't see him. I was like, he's not here. And then they were like, when they put out their injury report, they were like limited. I'm like, oh, he's not at the media portion, whatever.
Levin, always good stuff with you, my friend. Thank you as always. We really appreciate your time, my friend. Thank you so much. Enjoy the game this weekend.
Thank you. And, you know, anytime you guys call, I'm ready there to pick it up. No problem.
We love it, man. We love it, man. Thank you so much. Levin Reed, Boston, WBZ, on a Progressive guest line. Quote, buy and save on home insurance with Progressive's new Home Quote Explorer, only at progressive.com. Thought on Mac Jones when we come back, because, again, as he mentioned, he talked about something that we've seen a little bit at times with rookie quarterbacks, is that they do hit that wall. Some of them don't get to the playoffs, but that wall is there. We'll talk about that coming up next on Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks to Levin Reed from WBZ in Boston. This hour, Wake Up Call, by the way, presented by Rocket Mortgage. Need a mortgage that fits your life? Rocket can. And Levin Reed was on our Progressive guest line. Quote, buy and save on home insurance with Progressive's new Home Quote Explorer, only at progressive.com. Forgot to mention that, so I wanted to get that in. He talked about something that I think we all kind of know, but I really want to emphasize that rookie quarterbacks, they do run into a wall, and especially at the quarterback position, it does affect other rookies and all sorts of positions, but mostly at the quarterback position. Think about the last season that Mac Jones played. He played 12 regular season games at Alabama. Most of those games, if not all, you know, all of those games, well, they won all of them. So I should say they went undefeated. But some of those games were against really easy teams that they just didn't need full arsenal.
You're saying the Mercers of the world weren't a competition?
Right. The Mercers of the world, right? And then there are the SEC teams that they played, which didn't offer a fight as well. He played 12 games. Then he played the SEC title game. So it was 13 games with a week off in the process. Then a month off practically,
yep,
before you play two games to win the national championship. This has been the most consistent football he has played his entire life. And that goes with any rookie that goes this far in the postseason.
And what did Levin say? It's like 18 games, 19 games?
Yeah.
Now?
Yeah. It's a grind. And it's not a grind. You know, look, we picked on Urban Meyer when he was like, everybody's like Alabama. But he said what we all have to remember sometimes. There are no layups. There's no Mercers on the schedule,
yeah,
right? So he is, whereas at Alabama, and I'm sure Saban probably had him convinced that Mercer could beat them, blah, 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 blah. But as the game is getting 34-0 in the second quarter, you now don't have to do anything, right? You now can just call running plays to run out the clock so you don't embarrass the team.
You're bringing in your backups, your second string, third string, giving those guys some playing time.
And he's had like five or six games like that if you count some of the bottom feeders in the SEC that he got to play. Mm-hmm. The NFL never offers you that, ever. So every week is intense. Every week is on 11, even when you're playing Houston, even when you play Jacksonville, no matter who you play. So he is always intense, always showing up early, watching film constantly, worried about this guy, worried about that guy, seeing all pros on the other team, no matter what their record is, seeing real serious defensive threats all the time. And when you're a rookie and you've never done this before, and this is the furthest you've ever gone playing football, you do run into that wall. Yes, you're young, you have more energy, right? All of those things are correct. But it's the psychological stuff. It's the mental grind of going through this that you have to overcome. You have to learn how to do it. That's why rookie quarterbacks struggle, even as talented as they are. And when they do get to the postseason, they're not a safe bet because they are mentally drained. It's the most anyone has ever expected them to do this one thing they've been doing their whole life at any point in their life. And that's like what he's dealing with.
But I feel like Patriot fan is okay right now. It's like, you know, they have to look at this team like, you know, we probably overachieved a little bit here.
Yeah, sure. Because right, because in year two, he'll do better. Year three, it's common. By year four, you almost forget the good old days of college, right? It's become expected. All right, it's hour three coming up next. We're looking at Bobby Belt. We're going to be talking to him about the Dallas Cowboys as they get up against the 49ers coming up in hour three.